Welcome to a new series. We did 7 weeks on the gospel, and now we're going to do a few weeks between now and Mother's Day on Sabbath. The series is called Rested. But you're not only going to hear from me today, and some of you will be like, thank God, we hear enough of Pastor Caleb, but you're also going to hear a little bit from my wife today, which is very exciting. It took me a lot to get her up here, but she's agreed to come and share a little bit. So it's a bit of, I'll probably do three quarters and she'll do the last quarter. So the Sabbath starts the rhythm of rest, if you can get your head around that. The Sabbath starts the rhythm of rest. A Sabbath, in a technical term, if you haven't heard of that word before, is a 24-hour period where we stop, we cease working, paid work and unpaid work. We worship, spend some time with God. We delight. So we do things that bring joy to our hearts, bring peace to our hearts. And we rest. Ultimately, we rest. We take time away from hustle and bustle, working, and all the different chores and errands that we have to do. This was practiced by Jesus all throughout the Bible. He doesn't make a huge fuss about the Sabbath because it's expected that people would understand that he practiced the Sabbath. He doesn't do a huge amount of teaching on it because it's all throughout the Old Testament, and Jesus practiced the Sabbath just as they did in the Old Testament. You might remember, cast your mind way, way back. Some of you might remember a young girl by the name of Jessica Watson who circumnavigated the world in a yacht. Do you remember that? She was the youngest ever person at the time, at 16 years of age. I think it was back in about 2005, and she took her little yacht. Does anyone remember what it was called? I had to look it up this morning. No one? It was called the Pink Lady, this pink yacht, 16-year-old high school girl, and she, can you believe this? She sailed around the world solo, all on her own. And I was just watching, there's a new documentary that's come out. I was watching it with the kids the other day to update them on their Australian culture about this young girl who's circumnavigated the world on her own. And it's interesting, when she hit storms, when she hit winds, out in the middle of the ocean, you know, out in the middle of the Pacific or the Atlantic, and the storms and the winds and the huge waves would come to push her off course, she would throw out a sea anchor. So sea anchor is a little bit different from a normal anchor that you, where you would anchor in harbour or in the dock and you would anchor on the seabed. A sea anchor you would throw out in a storm, and it has a parachute on the anchor. And the parachute acts as a drag to help the boat stay on course and not drift dramatically during a storm. And this is exactly what the Sabbath is for our lives, not just our spiritual lives, but all of our life. The Sabbath is like the sea anchor that keeps our lives focused on God, keeps our lives resting in God, because the destructive winds and the pounding waves of life come, and ultimately what happens in the busyness of life is we lose our spiritual connection with God. I think John Mark Comer sums it up brilliantly in this quote where he says, ultimately nothing in this life apart from God can satisfy our desires. Tragically, we continue to chase after our desires infinitum. The result? A chronic state of restlessness or worse, angst, anger, anxiety, disillusionment, depression, all of which lead to a life of hurry, a life of busyness, overload, shopping, materialism, careerism, a life of more, which in turn makes us even more restless, and the cycle spirals out of control. If you haven't read this book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, it is a must read for anybody who wants to seriously follow Jesus in this cultural moment that we are living in. It really helps you to understand the challenge, the specific challenge to focusing Jesus in the current Western Aussie culture that we live in. It's expected for an Aussie to be living this life of wanting, rushing and buying. That seems to be the natural cycle. We want things, we want experiences, we want adventures, we want trips overseas, we want certain clothes, certain bodies, certain relationships. We want all of these great things. So that requires a lot of rushing. Got to rush to work, rush home from work, rush our kids around, earn more money, take the next job, climb the ladder. The rushing is required because rushing equals most of the time money, or rushing equals opportunity, options, you get to do things. And therefore, we're in this state of perpetual buying. We buy the entertainment, we buy the clothes, we try and buy the body and do all of these things. Essentially, we live in a world where we're strongly encouraged in our culture day by day to be materialists, to be workaholics, and to be consumers. Everything that comes out at us is selling us the dream of rest and peace through buying, through consuming, through working. And these things become what we call in Christianity idols, a false idol. So not God as my idol, but a false idol. We live in a world that's 24/7, 24/7 shops, 24/7 news, 24/7 streaming, 24/7 access to gymnasiums, 24/7 drive-throughs. Who's happy about that? That's not really a bad thing. 24/7 drive-throughs. The only people who go 24/7 are slaves. Slaves are oppressed and they work until they drop. But this is the kind of lifestyle we're encouraged to live. The information overload we have because of technology and the world that we live in means that people consume 100,000 words digitally, which is almost 34 gigs of content every day. 34 gigs of digital data, 100,000 words you consume every day. We're spoiled for options. You can basically do anything. You don't even have to have much money, and you can go places and watch sport, go on adventures, walks, hikes. If you live in Melbourne, you can do food, wine, snow, surf, adventure, beach, mountain. Like, it's all there. We are spoiled for options, and it paralyzes our spiritual life because we're so full of keeping up with the Joneses, so to speak. FOMO, fear of missing out. Our friend's life on social media looks far better than ours, and they went here and they know this person and they've got that connection and their kids hang out with this guy and this, you know, ex-AFL star coaches this team and this ex, you know, basketball guy does this workshop, and we should get the kids there and go there, and this life of the fear of missing out. You know, if a good Christian, say, prays for half an hour a day, let's say a diligent Christian might pray for half an hour a day, how much is that over a week? How much prayer time are you going to do spending with Jesus a week? 3.5 hours. Well done. I see some mathematicians here, and a couple of people actually are listening, which is nice. So we're off to a good start. No one thinks I'm funny, though, so that's not great. But we know that I'm not the funniest person. I've got good stuff to say, but I'm not the funniest person. That's fine. I've had to make my peace with that as well. So 3.5 hours of prayer, maybe a week. The average Australian looks at their iPhone screen for 5.5 hours. A day. A diligent Christian might pray for 3.5 hours a week, but most of us here will look at our phone for 5.5 hours a day, watching movies, looking at sports updates and all these kind of things. The problem is our desires, what we want, far outweigh the capacity of our souls to actually handle these desires. And when we start to get pretty clever, and we start to get a good job, and we start to earn some money, we can access everything our hearts so desires. The problem is our souls is often not capable of having the capacity to handle the things that we want. And this creates this incessant restlessness. People live lives of restlessness, depression, anxiety. The next generation, or Generation Z, the young people right now, teenagers and young adults, are called the most anxious generation of people, humans, that have ever lived on the face of the earth. They worry the most, they're the most anxious, they're the concerned the most. They have anxiety about the environment, they have anxiety about racism, they have anxiety about economic anxiety, about money, about the future. They have anxiety from the incessant divorce and dysfunctional families that we experience. And then, as Lauren said before, we try to solve these problems by going on a holiday or renting a hotel in the city for the weekend or going camping. And we think that maybe a holiday and checking out is going to deal with our restlessness and our anguish and our frustration and our dissatisfaction at life. But we've also been sold a lie there as well. The day off, the holiday, the weekend away, none of these things will deal with the spiritual problem, the problem we have in our souls. I'm all for these things. I'm big on holidays. I'm big on taking time off. I'm really big on that. But I'm also aware that these are not the things that are going to bring rest to my soul. and to get really deep with you and really like uncomfortable, because that's kind of what I like to do. Jesus calls demons and hell a restless place. Demons are called restless spirits by Jesus. They go about looking for a place to rest, to settle, and they can't find a place because they're restless. Godlessness is restlessness, but knowing God is knowing rest. So now that you're all sad and about to cry and you feel even more depressed, is there a solution to this problem? Is there a solution to this problem? Well, yes, there is. And they're called the spiritual practices. This is the antidote to our problem for anxiety and restlessness and dissatisfaction that we have. There's many spiritual practices, lots of them, 10, 20, 30 different ones. But as at Discover Church, we really try and hone in on these seven. These are the seven we're encouraging people to build into their lives, because this is the resistance to the culture of now, the culture of hustle, the culture of busy, the culture of tiredness. Part of the reason church is declining so much in Australia and in the Western world is because Christians themselves don't attend like they used to. They take shifts on Sunday mornings. They do kids' sport on Sunday mornings. They go out for brunch on Sunday mornings. They go to kids' parties on Sunday mornings. Part of the reason is that we've lost the art of slowing down and practicing our faith. Being a Christian has a little bit to do with intellectually agreeing with theology and doctrine, but it has a lot to do with how you practice your faith. And practice is hands-on. Practice is something we do. Practice is something we actually do together. So these are the seven core spiritual practices. I'm not going to go through all of them. If you were here last year, we actually spent 10 weeks looking at the spiritual practices. I encourage you to go back and watch the videos, listen to the podcasts. But the spiritual practice of Sabbath that we discussed is defined as a day each week devoted to rest and worship. And for most people, 95% of people, I would encourage you, if you're going to practice this spiritual practice, just to make that Sunday, which for you who are a little bit older might remember that that was the day a long time ago when the shops weren't open. Remember those days? When the Sunday roast was cooked on the Sunday afternoon and no one was going anywhere, no one was going to a shift for work or kids' sport, and even elite sport wasn't often on Sundays a long time ago, like 50 years ago. Because it was a day devoted to rest and worship. And this was culturally valued in our nation of Australia. But we've lost this now as we've diverged from Christianity and become more secular. We've lost a lot of these ideas. But as people of faith, we should not lose them. They're important. Let me give you a really quick Bible overview, and then I'm going to invite my wife up to share a little bit about how we've been practicing Sabbath as a family the last 18 months. In Genesis chapter 2, it says in verse 1, it's the second chapter of the Bible, it says, "So the creation of the heavens and the earth and everything in them was completed. And on the seventh day, God had finished his work of creation." Everyone say work. Everyone say work. So he rested from all his work. Everyone say rested. "And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy." Everyone say holy. Because it was the day when he rested from all of his work of creation. You see, even God himself is part of the cosmic rhythm of rest, sustainable pace, the cycle of actually moving with the rhythms of creation, the universe, nature, human beings, community, schedule. And this, if you know your Bible, is before man sinned or man rebelled against God. So this isn't something that was put in place to deal with sin. This is something that was put in place even before man separated themselves from God. So when man was in right relationship with God, God rested and God said the seventh day, one day a week, will be holy. You see, God builds everything in cycles. In circles, if you like, because God knows what's best. And he created even the week in cycles. God didn't say you should separate work from rest. That's not what he was saying. He was saying they should cycle together. So don't get caught in a kind of dualism here that work is bad and rest is good. That's not what I'm saying. No, we're meant to work. Work is also before the fall. You should work. The Apostle Paul says if you don't work, you shouldn't eat. Work is important, and vocation in our jobs is actually the key way in which we cultivate culture. It's how we build Aussie culture. Every time you go out and work, you're contributing to society, to the community, and work is very much a godly thing. But God has this rhythm that he introduces to us that he practices himself. It's a work-rest rhythm, and it goes around in a circle. I think Wayne Mueller sums this up really, really well. This is a fantastic quote. If I was you, I would read this during the week. I would pray over this. I would meditate over this. It helps me a lot. When we live without listening to the timing of things, when we live and work in 24-hour shifts without rest, we are on wartime, mobilized for battle. Yes, we are strong and capable people, and we can work without stopping faster and faster, electric lights making artificial days so the whole machine can labor without ceasing. I think that's a helpful part of the quote, because I know a lot of you will be sitting there, and I'm a lot like this too, going, but yeah, I'd like to make things happen. I actually enjoy work. And that's okay. God created work. Work is good, but it's about the cycle that you live in. But remember, Mueller says, no living thing lives like this, not in the 24/7 type of work. It's actually part of the fall. God didn't call, after the fall, God called work toil. Man would toil, man would sweat, man would struggle. Before the fall, when man was in right relationship with God, work was an expression of the divine. It was an expression of reflecting who God was. God worked, people worked. There are greater rhythms, seasons, and hormonal cycles, and sunsets and moonrises, and great movements of seas and stars, and we are part of the creation story, subject to all its laws and rhythms. You see, God created things in cycles and circles, all of creation, the weeks, the month, the years that go by, the planets that move, the tides that come in and out, the circle of life that Simba knows very well, the circle of life. We are born, we live, and then we die. And this is how God has created things in circles. Have you noticed so much of our culture and how we're encouraged to live as Australians, as Westerners, is not in circles? It's in lines. Successful living in Aussie culture is up and to the right. It's a chart of higher performance year on year going up and up and up. It's Excel spreadsheets with more money on the bottom line. We stand in queues. We wait in traffic in lines. You sit in rows in church. And that's why we encourage life groups. Life groups are even more powerful than sitting in church on a Sunday. Why? Because Sunday is lines, life group is... Some of you are getting it. Well done. Does anyone go to a life group and the seven of you at life group sit in little lines and listen to someone talk? No, you don't. You sit in circles. And you eat and you discuss and you look left and you look right, because God creates things in circles and cycles, and things go round and round. It's a rhythm of work and rest. It's actually moving with the universe that God has created. Our lives, our schedules, our finances, our relationships should be moving in circles and cycles as God has designed it. That's why we struggle so much when things don't work out. When people tragically die, when we lose our job all of a sudden, when a marriage falls apart, we struggle so much because we're never used to things ending, because it's always upwards and onwards. It's always in a line. It's always bulldozing to an end product, an end goal, an end outcome. It's very business orientated, very Greek philosophy orientated, where the Jewish people and the way that God designed things was in cycles. Things are going to end. Relationships won't go for, not every friendship is going to go forever. It's okay. Things rise and fall. As Mufasa says, it's the cycle of life. I just watched that movie with Jed during the week. Sorry, it's on my mind. He calls it The Lion's King. Can we watch The Lion's King? I'm like, it's Lion King. He's like, can we watch The Lion's King? It's Lion King. There's no S in there, but he's just learning to speak, all right? So God creates things perfectly, but then man rebels. We call this sin, which it might be a funny religious word for some people. It's called rebellion. Human race rebelled against God. So in Exodus 20 verse 8, when God is giving out the 10 commandments, the fourth commandment that God gives to people in order to tell them how to live right is remember to observe the Sabbath by keeping it holy. So it's echoing what was said in Genesis 2. But now man is rebellious. Man does their own thing. Man is individualized. But remember the Sabbath, God is saying to the people of Israel. You have 6 days each week to do your ordinary work. Now, when we talk about work over the next few weeks, it's not just work you get paid for. It's also work you don't get paid for. So it's errands, it's stuff to do, it's chores at home, as much as it is going to a job that you get a wage for. That's an important separation. But the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. And that's why I encourage you to try and keep Sunday as a Sabbath day. Just dedicate one day a week. Come to church, worship with your community, put your kids out the back so they can learn about Jesus, go home, eat some food, talk to someone, talk to your husband for the first time that week. Have some friends over that bring delight. Not friends you got to work with, but some people that you just want to eat and drink with. Show hospitality, spend the afternoon napping, spend some time with your kids, debrief what they learnt in kids' church, talk to your partner or your friend about what you learnt in the sermon. Have a lazy afternoon. Don't go and mow the lawns and don't go and do the grocery shopping and don't rush off to a party. Just say no to all of that stuff for a day a week. Have sex. Go out for dinner with your partner. Do things that bring delight, that bring rest. Don't look at your phone. Don't scroll through YouTube. Don't listen to the latest conspiracy theory from whatever influencer you follow on Instagram. Just put all that aside for 5 seconds. Don't jump on and do some emails. Don't check your share price. Just have a day a week. The shares will be there tomorrow. The emails will still be in your inbox. Your friends might not be there, so eat with them. Your children might not grow up and choose to follow Jesus, so spend time on a Sunday discipling them, teaching them. My children probably won't grow up remembering all the things I taught them, but I hope they grow up remembering we took a day a week to focus on God. I don't think they're going to forget that over the years. And then just as my wife comes up, I'm going to come up, sweetie. Matthew 2:27, Jesus talks about the Sabbath in the famous scripture. I've taken it from the NLT, so it might sound a bit different to you. But Jesus says the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. Jesus practiced the Sabbath the right way. This is the last thing I want to say, because a lot of people hear Sabbath and go, isn't that Old Testament? Isn't that what Jewish people do? I'm a Christian. I'm free. But you're mishearing what Jesus is saying there. I added this up this morning. If Jesus practiced the Sabbath every day and he lived for 33 and a half years, it was about 1,700 Sabbaths that Jesus observed. 1,700. There's a handful of times, maybe 4 or 5 times in the Bible when we're told Jesus broke the requirements, the laws of the Sabbath. He healed. Remember that? He raised the dead. He ate the wrong food. He picked grain with his disciples. So he essentially broke the Jewish law of the Sabbath. But Jesus was able to break the requirements of the Jewish law because he was actually showing us how to practice the Sabbath properly. As he says here in this scripture, Sabbath is made to meet the needs of people, which means God created a day a week because you need to rest and you need to worship and you need to be in community and you need to spend time with your children without a digital iPhone or something like that. People weren't created to meet the needs of some Jewish archaic law. Jesus is separating the two. But he's also implying that he practices the Sabbath. He just does it the right way. So we actually did our Sabbath yesterday because we had a few, Friday because we had a few events on this week, and we took the kids to the zoo. Is that perfect technical Sabbath? I don't know. You can judge us, go home and gossip about us. That's fine. But no, I know none of you would do that. Everyone loves their pastor, let's be honest. No one's ever had a problem with any of my sermons. That's fine. But we practiced it a little bit differently this week. It wasn't our normal thing because why? We are people that need the Sabbath. We are not people created to try and do Sabbath type things. So we did it a little bit differently this week. And that's the beauty of living in the New Testament is there is flexibility and freedom, but the principle of rest remains. So I was just going to share for a moment what we've been doing the last 18 months. It's been far from perfect, but we've really made this a strong principle in our family.
Good morning, everybody. Lovely to see you all. So we've been practicing Sabbath now for about 18 months. So by no means am I an expert in any way. I feel much more like a novice just trying to work it out and give it a go. But when I say practicing, I really mean practicing, because it's taken quite a bit of time to build it into our life, into our family rhythm and our routine, and the way that we follow Jesus together. But it has become definitely one of my most valued practices and one of the most enjoyable practices when it comes to following Jesus. So we Sabbath all day on a Saturday. The entire day is a day of rest. And I look forward to it from Sunday. And my kids, even though it means no technology, no YouTube, no screens, they still say to me on Friday night, yay, it's Sabbath tomorrow. So I would like to say it's going well so far. Prior to this, I had very little understanding around Sabbath and what that really meant. And I just probably didn't really consider it applicable to me and my life in our modern culture today. I do remember the Lord's Day growing up, as Caleb was sharing, but I really wish someone had introduced the concept and taught me on what Sabbath really was, because the past year and a half, it has been like an oasis to me in many, many ways. And that doesn't mean that every Sabbath is perfect, because it's far from it, but it has become an anchor point in my life and in my personal relationship with Jesus. So things can happen in the week. There can be trials, which there are. There can be unexpected events, which always happen. There can be sickness in our household, which is perpetual. You know, there can be conversations that I miss and prayer times that I miss. But I know on Saturday, on Sabbath, it's going to be okay, because I will stop and I will cease and I won't work and I'll let go of that never-ending to-do list that is always there and always urgent, and I will just rest, and I will delight in God, I will delight in my family, and I will delight in the incredible world that He has given us as a gift. And I'm reminded that, well, it is well with my soul, and God is in control. And that's my experience. Wayne Mueller, which Caleb has already mentioned this morning, says this: like a path through the forest, Sabbath creates a marker for ourselves, so if we are lost, we can find our way back to our center. And that is very much my experience of Sabbath. So for us, what does it look like? Well, we practice, given the stage of life that we're in, the season that we're in, we practice Sabbath as a family. And so that means just being together. So what we do it together. And yes, I have a very strong-willed two-year-old, so it doesn't always feel relaxing, okay? But I try and have a different spirit and a different approach to all things that happen on Sabbath, because I know it's a season, and one day my delightful, strong-willed two-year-old won't want to drag my hand around to collect leaves or play hide-and-seek. So I try and cherish that and treat it as the gift that it is that God has given me, and then my children want to stop for the day and spend time with us. So I enjoy it. It also means for us going outside, weather permitting. You never know in Melbourne. But being in nature, going on walks, exploring, doing new things, going somewhere where there's space and there's quiet, and if I can possibly see the horizon, that is good for the soul. We'll often end up outside underneath our ornamental pears, lying on lounge chairs, and we have space on Sabbath. We talk. We talk about God. We don't talk about work. We don't talk about anything that's demanding in that way. But we do talk about God, and we talk with our children about the way the world works, the way that God works. And we have those conversations on Sabbath that we don't normally get to have during the week. And the conversations that only ever come through when there is sufficient space. Some things are never said unless there's a lot of space allocated around them. So Sabbath is a time of space, and it helps me be a very intentional parent. I think my kids knew more about the war in Ukraine than was necessary. But we were Sabbathing, and the opportunity was there to explain what was going on. We'll read scripture, we'll worship together, We'll pray. The kids have just started making prayer journals the last couple of weeks, and they have the Lord's Prayer in there, Serenity Prayer, all these different things, so that they can have that in their own time of stillness and quiet before God. And we always, if we can, spend time with close friends, and we always eat a lot of food. There's something about food and Sabbath being synonymous. There are no diets and no fasting on Sabbath days for us, and we always start with a giant big breakfast all together to kick off our Sabbath day. So it's a great day, and it's full of the permission to rest, because often we actually need the permission to stop and to rest and to not do. And it's full of gratitude towards God for what we have now, not what we want or not what we want to become, but just as we are and with what we have. You know, I'd still like to work on them a little bit and get a little bit more time of quiet and peace and stillness, but have any of you met my 5-year-old son, Jed? And I'd like to work in naps, but, you know, I just think that's something for another season. But I've learned that Sabbath takes time. You have to prepare to rest. It doesn't just happen. You can't just switch off and say, well, I won't do anything today. You actually have to prepare. So I remember our first Sabbath, I was up past midnight, the night before, doing laundry. I had to go do a food shop when all the kids were in bed because I realised we didn't have any food and I wasn't going to go to the shops tomorrow, and then you can't Sabbath without chocolate. And then I was finishing an email and doing the laundry because of school uniforms, blah, blah. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. All those other things like appointments and errands and, you know, going to see the doctor and consuming entertainment, all those things have to find another place during the week. And at first that was a little bit tricky, but now my week is much different. It's actually orientated, my whole week, the whole 6 days are orientated towards this one day of rest. And it's been quite amazing. I understand what the writer of Hebrews said when he said, make every effort to enter his rest, because it does require effort, intentionality, and planning, but the reward is much greater. It also requires discipline. It takes a bit of discipline to not pick up your phone for 24 hours. It's such a habit. And I'm sure most of you will know that you just pick your phone up even if you're not going to check it. It's just over and over you're picking up our phones. It takes discipline for me to say no to, this sounds terrible, to cleaning, because, you know, I always pick up the vacuum because I don't like the Play-Doh on the ground, okay? I don't like that there's food everywhere. But I say no to vacuuming as best as I can. I'm working on it, all right? But when I say no to screens and certain activities and all these things, what I am saying is a big and repeated yes to something I want more and something that is far more valuable to me and someone who is more important to me. And I'm saying a big repeated yes to having a clear mind, an open heart, and a quiet spirit. And that is something I want to say yes to all the time. It's a way I want to live. I'm also saying yes, and this is really important for me considering the season that I'm in my life. I'm really saying yes to my children. I'm saying yes to teaching them not to live under the tyranny of hurry and consumerism. They are reminded every week that God is first, and that he's more important than stuff, than things, than doing, than having, than buying, than being seen here or looking like that. And that's just so important in our culture. And they also experience Sabbath and being with God as fun and enjoyable. And I want them to know that side of Christianity, not just religious practice, but the actual relationship and enjoyment you get with Jesus. So despite the hurdles and the slip-ups, when I check my phone or vacuum my floor, because not every Sabbath is perfect, obviously, Sabbath is good. And I feel centered, and I feel first things are actually first. So I encourage you today, ask yourself, do I need to practice Sabbath? And in doing that, I would ask, how is my soul? Has my soul grown? Has my soul deepened? Are you a generous person? Are you joyful? Are you gracious, full of appreciation for people? Can you see people's strengths as opposed to their weaknesses and their differences? Are you hurried or stressed? Or are you at peace? Do do you love well? Because I can tell you something I've learned. It is very difficult to love people well when you are not rested. And that's a very, very important thing. So as Caleb said, the remedy is not like a gym membership or even a day at the spa, although, you know, great, I'm all for those things. But it won't fix the underlying problem. Whereas stopping a rest and delight in God for a moment, for a day, just might.
Thank you. Thank you, sweetie. Really blessed to have a wife that, you know, we're able to be a team on this, because it's really difficult to Sabbath if you're not a team. Although if your spouse or partner isn't interested in it, I would encourage you to just keep following Jesus without their approval, because this kind of stuff is really, really important. So just as we finish today, the invitation this week and for the next 4 weeks is going to be, surprise, surprise, to practice Sabbath, to give it a go. So the subtitle that you can see there on the screen, it says, select a time period, prepare for it, and then practice resting using the following four elements. That's really as simple as it is. You've got to select a time period. So I would encourage you to do Sunday, if that works for you, but for some of you, maybe it doesn't. And if 24 hours is a big step and you've never done it before, just start with a 4 hour, 5 hour, afternoon, morning, just something that's set aside. Something that's set aside for you and God. You got to prepare for it, as Zoe said. You know, nothing in our spiritual life happens without preparation. I've found over the last few years that one of the best preparation techniques for my prayer life is actually sleep. Without good sleep, you don't have good prayer. If you sleep well, you can pray well. It's very difficult to pray outside of early morning. Early morning is by far the best time to pray, although it's obviously possible to spend time with God at other times. But if you sleep well, you can pray well. If you don't sleep well, you're not getting up to pray. That's the first thing that's going to go as you hit that alarm. So preparation is critical for any of the spiritual practices. If you think you're in a rush and then all of a sudden fall into a beautiful time of reading God's word and praying and meditating, just letting him transform your heart, and that comes out of rest and hustle and rushing, well, then you're kidding yourself. It doesn't. And we all know that. Let's be honest with each other. The more we rush, the less we pray, the less we spend time with God, the less we prioritize church, life group, living in community together. And these are the four elements that make a Sabbath a Sabbath. The first one is stopping. So we cease from all work, all thinking about work, and all worrying and wanting. The second thing we do to make Sabbath different to a day off is that we worship. So we center our lives on worship, therefore orientating our family, our week toward grateful praise and adoration of God. Without worship and prayer, a Sabbath day is just really a day off. And we rest. We rest our soul and we restore the whole person. So we renew, we nap, we sleep, we focus on things that renew us on the inside, on our inner life. And finally, we delight. We renew our soul with activities that spark joy, wonder, gratitude, and happiness. Some of you might have been here last year, or some of you might have done the recent Emotionally Healthy course, and we've been talking about Sabbath a bit. And my next slide here is a real quick one because I want to finish. You can start tinkling, Jackson. Why reteach the Sabbath? This might help you. When anyone changes and transforms, yes, we hope that God meets you right now in your seat and shifts your heart and you just have this huge jump in behavior change. But that doesn't tend to be the way that it happens. We tend to become aware of something. And maybe you're sitting there today, it's on this side for you, sorry, level one. I'm just a little bit aware of Sabbath. I never really heard of that before. Oh, interesting. Maybe some of you are at ponder level or value level, step three there, where you're, oh, I've heard this a bit before. I'm definitely aware of it. You know, every time I tell someone about Sabbath, guess what their response is? My family practices Sabbath. The response is always like, wow, that sounds fantastic. No one's ever said, that sounds crap, being restful and delighting and eating and spending time with my kids. Like, no one says that. But do people do it? Often not, because this is how we often work as human beings. We need awareness. We ponder, oh, I could do this maybe. That's possible. I've heard of someone doing it. We move to value. Oh, I'm actually starting to value this. I've done it a little bit. I've tried it on. I actually value this. This is important. This is how I want to live. I want to follow Jesus properly. And part of doing that is I need to stop and be with him. And then that's where the gap, and we jump the gap, we take action, we change our behavior. And I know a lot of people will be sitting there going, man, I would have to shift this and change that, and that's impossible. And I know, I've been there. That's always the first reaction. I'm so busy, I'm so whatever. I know, you're so important. We think we're so important. I've got so much to do. You don't understand my life, Pastor Kay. And that's fine. This is your choice. I'm not here. My job as a pastor is to teach you the Word of God, to encourage you how to follow Jesus. But you have to make that decision. It's between you and God.